That was not just a little peck on the cheek.
I think if Amanda Peet smooched me, I would notice it also. I'm just saying.
Everybody, you're Sorkin in it. It's Studio 60. Please take just a minute. It's about a show, kind of like SNL, but it only lasted one season. Oh, well, we're Sorkin in it.
Welcome back to Sorkin in it. I'm Brian Warren.
And I'm Lex Friedman.
He is Lex Friedman. And here we are. It's episode 3 of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. I won't say season 1, episode 3, because really, there's just one season.
Season only.
Yeah. And this one's called The Focus Group, which, you know, it kind of gives you an idea of how this show is going to start. But Lex, can you give us just a quick recap of this episode?
I can try.
Okay.
We have a focus group who's, you know, taking a look at Studio 60. We've got all kinds of internal drama. We get to see a whole lot of the making of an episode, the scripting, the rehearsing, the prepping. We get to see Ricky and Ron kind of really leaning in hard to being jerks, in my opinion. And we get some pressure on Jordan and on the whole team to outperform or to keep up, to not lose more than 10% of the audience from last week's episode. And we get some Jordan drama that adds, I think, just about nothing. And that's the episode, in my opinion. And Brian, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording. We do that. Sorry, listeners. It happens. And I think you said that you struggled to find this episode memorable. I struggled to take notes during this episode. It didn't feel noteworthy at times.
Sure.
But I'll say this. I liked the episode.
Yeah.
And there were some parts that I really liked. But this is the scantest notes I've taken while watching a Sorkin project in some time.
Now, were you on the Peloton while you were watching this episode? Because sometimes, you know, that makes it harder to take notes.
No, sir. I was stationary, but not on a stationary bike.
Okay. The episode starts with a focus group, surprise, surprise. And it's kind of
shocking.
It shows right as the episode of Studio 60 that they're watching. That's not confusing. Ends and the entire room gives a round of applause to the episode of the show, which I thought was kind of a funny way to start. And then they're like, what didn't you like? So Lex, what didn't you like?
I don't know. I was hard pressed, and maybe this is my own, you know, naivete, but I was hard pressed to believe that they would be focus grouping one episode of Studio 60 after these two guys came back to the show. Mm-hmm. Like, let them get their feet under them, see how things go, and then focus group it.
Sure.
Like at first I thought, oh, time has passed, but then they were very clearly like, how many viewers do we have to retain from last week? Like mm-hmm. when we had mm-hmm. their first show back. So it just seemed early. It seemed a little bit goofy. So I don't know. It seemed a little silly to me. I did like, I liked Jordan's criticism of focus groups. Like, these are people who are unemployed and available to do this right now, and they are very stupid.
Yeah.
I also thought they looked a whole lot like extras. Like, some mm-hmm. of them were very attractive. Some of them were very odd looking. I was like, yep, that's Los Angeles extras.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I didn't buy into it, nor did I think, boy, this focus group is really going to make them change Studio 60. Like, the show's been around for 20 years at this point. Like, it seems silly.
It's a good point. And I think, I guess it makes sense to see how audience are responding to the new people. To have the presence of mind to do it in the first week is a little bit intense. I don't know that that I find that super believable.
Yeah.
And then there was the whole like subplot or related thing of like, is Studio 60 patriotic or unpatriotic? And that just made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
And I think Jordan says something like, since when do we care? And Steven Weber's character, Jack Rudolph, says, since 9/11, kitten. And I'm like, kitten? Really? Kitten? Like, that's the word we're going to use. That's the word that Aaron Sorkin wrote and put into Steven Weber's mouth. I don't like that.
I didn't like that, nor did I like this idea that we have to ask about how patriotic the show is since 9/11. Like, it all seemed crazy.
Nope.
But so I did like, we get to see a rehearsal, and I mm-hmm. liked it a lot. I thought they did a couple things very cleverly in that scene. One, we get to see some more of the cast members doing a little bit more, the show within a show cast members. I thought that the conceit of this sketch was funny. We get to see more of the sketch during the show. I thought mm-hmm. it was funny. I thought mm-hmm. it was much better than the cold open a week ago.
This is the science schmiance one.
Science schmiance, which did a lot of things. It did things that SNL doesn't do anymore, but did some more of back then, where it wasn't just a game show, which SNL goes to that well all the time. But like, it was celebrity impersonation and also a witch. Like, the fact that we've got like Tom Cruise and also a witch is just like maximum goofiness. I really enjoyed, and I liked sometimes Sorkin, as we've said many times, great writer. Sometimes he gets a little bit telly versus showy. Here, nobody ever says Matt's stressed out or Matt's overtired or Matt's exhausted, but Matt misspeaks in a very believable way. I think it's sometimes hard to write misspeaking, but he gets the word wrong for a second and has to fix it. I like that. I like that Rob Reiner is the host. Rob Reiner, who's directed at least two Sorkin movies that we watched. A Few Good Men and American President, for those who are struggling to keep up. And I appreciated, and it's funny as a stark contrast to the cold open last week, I appreciated how good the comedy work was in this scene. Like how they're thinking about what is and isn't funny, telegraphing a joke too soon. I liked the Ben Stiller impression that guy did. I liked that he had to do a worse Cruise impression than we would see him do on Friday when the show went live. Like, I liked it.
Yeah.
This was my favorite scene.
That visibility into them getting better at putting the sketch together, that is that's like some next level writing and acting there that just makes the whole week and the progression of that show very believable.
100%. I totally agree.
And then the power goes out, which feels like another well that that Sorkin dips into, and then they kind of reuse that a few times.
I didn't even write down either time the power went out because I just didn't care. Like, I didn't write it down at all. And then we see that Jordan is, you know, getting in a fight with people about what she has to do again. And that felt like we've seen this scene already. And then she's, what are you looking at? And then she says, my mugshot. And I did not care about that plot line at all. Well, I cared about it in a way that they didn't want me to. I kind of cared about it the way that, Bradley Whitford's character, Danny, wants us to care about it at the end, which is like, don't drive drunk, asshole, was basically his point. But I didn't care, like, oh, more trouble for Jordan. Like, it just seems like we're just throwing stuff up in her face. And then, like, villains are the stars of their own story. And few people think of themselves as the villain, right? They think of themselves as their own little hero. I'm hard-pressed at this moment to see how Ricky and Ron are not just villains. Like, the things that he said, I don't even know which one is which. I do love Evan Handler, the actor. The things he's saying to Sim about, hey, make sure you're funny and do a good job on this and, like, don't choke and whatever. Like, it is the worst kind of pep talk. He's also a writer. He's not as important as the actor on that show. Now, I'm not saying that in terms of my opinion on the subjectivity of those things. I love writing. I love comedy writing. But I'm saying, like, the stars are the stars of the show. He can't sass them. He doesn't have that power. So I didn't get, like, why is he being a jerk? I thought that Evan Sandler's character should know better. And then the joke that Sim and Nate Cordry write that's, like, weird and homophobic is not at all funny.
Nope.
Ricky and Ron being jerks is stupid. And I'm not with any of them when we get Harriet giving her punchline to something about a bear.
Yeah.
Reach for comment. The bear said, roar. I thought that was great. You didn't like it. Your face is, you didn't like it. I thought that was a funny joke. It made me laugh. I was like, no, I like that bear. A bear said, roar. That's funny.
I think as written, the joke is kind of boring, but they even talk about it later where they're like, well, of course Harriet will nail it and then it'll be really funny and the audience will go nuts. And I'm like, yeah, of course she will. I totally believe that as acted, that will be a great joke. It wasn't as clever, I guess, but that's fine.
Right. It reminded me of Kevin Nealon a little bit. Like when he hosted Weekend, he'd be like, let's look at that story from another angle. And then they would just change camera shots and he would turn his body. Like, I love it. He's so great. But Ricky and Ron are giving out the focus group stuff, which they're not supposed to do. And then Brian, we haven't beaten up Jordan enough. Let's make her life and backstory even worse, shall we?
Let's do it.
Her ex-husband sucks. Her ex-husband or ex-partner, I don't know which was. He used to make her go to sex clubs. It seemed a little bit reminiscent of that Jerry Ryan story. Her husband was running for Congress or something, and it came out that he used to make her do the same thing. I don't know. But she's extremely competent. She's extremely talented. She's extremely successful. How much trauma do we have to give her? Especially like sexually charged trauma. It's just, I don't know. I wasn't here for it. Didn't work for me.
No, and it's feels a little tropey to say it, but it's still worth saying. Like, we don't know any like sexual trauma in Steven Weber's history or really Matt and Danny. Like, they have drugs in their past, which is, I guess, a little bit more neutral. I don't know. But the fact that the strong, powerful woman is the one who has this in her life, and that we have to keep dipping into it unnecessarily. Like, we've already got the DUI. Like, I don't know. It just seems like, yeah, it's overloading something that really doesn't need it.
And I also am hard pressed to believe that hiring executives at this level, they didn't turn it up, but some mm-hmm. random news report did. And then that it was like this huge story that one time she was busted for DUI years ago, that all the networks are covering, and they're going to parody it on Studio 60. Like, get out of here. That seemed dumb. We also get a scene where somebody tells Matt he's working too hard, and that if he doesn't let Ricky and Ron and the other writers carry more of the load, then he's going to really grind himself out. And I love Sorkin with his character of Matt, who is basically Sorkin saying, boy, you work so hard, man. You're like, this is, you're okay. I got it.
You're taking it all on your shoulders. And it turns out you're doing a really good job.
Yes. And you're killing it. And, there's somebody, I forget. Oh, what's the name of the character who's now dating Matt?
Jeannie.
Jeannie's like, hey, can I talk to you guys about it? Cause she's got this whole dumb plot about her sketch is too smart and people don't laugh at it and whatever else. But she asks if they can talk, and Danny's like, well, can we walk while we do it? And then we have our first like real walk and talk. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah. One of the, if we're just talking about lovely moments, there's a moment where Danny and Jordan go talk to Matt because Jordan wants Matt to write a sketch or at least make fun of her in the DUI.
Right.
And so they walk in, they surprise Matt, which is funny because he starts yelling at me. He's like, oh, I didn't realize it was you guys. And then Danny says to Matt, she wants you to make fun of her. And Matt says, okay, well, your teeth are pretty big.
Yes, I did enjoy that.
And she's like, what do you mean? They're not. Yeah, I don't know. It was fun.
I agree with you. And that that feels like a classic comedy beat to me. Sorkin does it really well, but I enjoy it. And then Matt's like, hey, Danny, I know that you know what we have to do, like how much of the audience we have to keep. Like, tell me what it actually is. And he's like, you don't want to know. And so, no, you got to tell me. And then he tells him, we got to keep 90%. And if we don't, then this, all these bad things are going to happen. And then Matthew Perry's like, lie to me next time.
He's like, that's what I've been telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many times Danny says, don't worry about it in this episode, but it feels like a very Josh Lyman kind of don't worry about it. I feel like he told Santos not to worry about poll numbers a bunch of times. So maybe that was it rang true for me.
I also like it as a thing for him. Yeah. Like, I believe that his character should be the guy who, no, I worry about the problems. Yeah. You're creatives. You create, and I'm going to worry about it. But he's clearly also like, he's not directing Studio 60. He's executive producing Studio 60. He's giving direction. He gives the character whose name I cannot keep in my head for 2 seconds, even though you just told it to me a minute ago. It's gone.
Jeannie.
He gives Jeannie that advice of like, hey, you're gonna wanna like punch too hard, and you're gonna wanna try too much, and like just know, like he's clearly good at what he does. But I like him as the guy who's like, no, I'll handle all the stress stuff. Don't worry about it. The rest of it is good. I also really like that guy. And I think I talked about this in our preview episode for this season. I really like that guy's Nicolas Cage. We get to see him do a little bit of Nicolas Cage.
It was good.
So there are two montages in this episode. One is the live show montage. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it. I appreciated the energy. Like, they're in it. Here's this sketch. Here's a clip of this sketch. Here's this. And like, there was some funny stuff. There was some really good stuff happening. Mm-hmm. I don't think, we don't see a ton of whatever they call the news show thing. News 60. We don't see a ton of that, but like we see some clips of sketches. We see them working hard. We see them like smiling backstage as they rush their changes, whatever.
And the audience is losing their minds. They're laughing so freaking hard.
No audience has ever enjoyed sketch comedy as much as that audience. And then, you know, now we're at the post, the cast party, I guess, the post show party. And Jordan's waiting desperately for the numbers, and Danny wants to know if she has them yet. And I found that silly. It did remind me very much of the West Wing. Like, do we have the poll numbers yet? It's been 2 minutes since the poll started.
That moment where Amanda Peet, Jordan McDear is at that desk waiting for the poll numbers for a fax, I guess. She breaks the pen. Like that little pen that's attached with the chain to the desk, and she's just fiddling with it, and it breaks off. And that look in her face, she's like, oh, no, I just broke it. And she just kind of gently sets it down. Oh, just great. Like, so subtle, that physical acting, but I was totally there for it.
Yes, and like so human. It was a really human moment. And then we get a little fight between Matt and Danny. And this is one of those moments where I'm pretty sure I understood what was going on. I liked that they fought. I even liked that he tackled him in this case because it was a friend tackle on sand. It didn't feel like violence. I didn't like the immediate homophobia joke that we had to follow up with.
Didn't like that.
But I guess Matt, in talking to Harriet, suddenly realizes that that question that you cited in the beginning about is the show patriotic had been planted by Danny so that he could shove it in Matt's face and say, hey, stop hiding from political jokes. And I think we're supposed to know that there's some backstory. I think we learn over the course of it, but there's some backstory where years ago, Matt said something in defense of a joke that Bill Maher made, and then Ricky and Ron said something like, well, he doesn't speak for all of us because here at Studio 60, we care about the victims of 9/11.
Yeah.
And Matt's like, as opposed to me. Like, so there's all this stuff where Matt was a little too scared to do political comedy, which is dumb. Mm-hmm. And like, he shouldn't be. It's effectively Saturday Night Live, right? He has to be able to do political sketches. And so he's mad because he puts it all together. But the funny thing is, it worked. And so he's like, he's mad that he got tricked by a trick that worked.
Yep.
But so I don't know. I liked them fighting and very quickly making up. Mm-hmm. And I liked some of the joke. And they could have done it without like being so weirdly homophobic about it. Like, saying punch me in the face was dumb. Like, hey, get off me now would be fine. Are people staring? Yeah, probably. Two rich people tackling each other on the sand at a party. And then, Brian, we get the good news. We get the news that not only did they not lose more than 10%, they gained. They're up like 9% week over week.
Biggest Friday night in 14 years, they said.
Yes, the biggest Friday night in 14 years, which, why? Because of the Modern Major General cold open last week? Is that how we did it?
Oh, no.
So Jordan's excited, and she hugs Matt, and she smooches Danny.
Yeah.
And she gives Danny a not-for-nothing kiss, and you see Danny kind of have a moment kind of appreciating that kiss. And I don't remember if they end up having a romance on this show, but it feels like they're teeing up them having a romance on this show.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like they are in orbit around each other already, I suppose. That was not just a little peck on the cheek.
I think if Amanda Peet smooched me, I would notice it also. I'm just saying. I'm observant in that way. Mm-hmm. And then there's a montage to end the episode. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure why or what value it brought to the episode. I hate episode ending montages as a rule, which is not to say that they're all bad. Sometimes they can be fine. But this one, I didn't get it. Did it work for you? Like, did you take something away from this montage? Like, it didn't even seem like additive to the storytelling.
No. The only thing I wrote at the end of it was like, let's see. Ricky and Ron are sad because that was a part of the montage. Everybody's happy except for Ricky and Ron because they're drowning their sorrows because none of their jokes or none of their sketches or anything made it into the show.
Right. They got nothing on tonight.
And the other part of the montage was this seeds were planted for it just a few minutes earlier because some smiley blonde woman is really kind of sidling up to Sim and she's like, you know, how'd you get in here? Well, look at me, you know, that kind of a thing. And then, so she's like kind of sweet on him, but he is very neutral about her. And then in the montage, he goes and introduces her to Tom Jeter and Tom Jeter kind of mouths, thank you. And
thank you. Because women are property that we can just assign from one to another. Yes.
This one's mine. And now she's yours. That was a little weird. It kind of made me wonder, like, what's Sim's story? Because he's, I don't know, maybe he's got a special friend already, and good for him. But
right. Or maybe he just didn't like her.
Yeah,
and
that's
he knew that somebody else would. But yeah, it was. I don't know. There was something weird there to me. I didn't love the trade. Let's say,
yeah.
I'm like, hey, you can have this one. It felt very weird to me.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I liked this episode, but I feel like we talked about it fast. Like, I didn't write down that much, even though I was enjoying it. It did feel like it moved. It had a good clip. Sometimes, you know, any episode of TV can drag a little bit, and this one did not feel like it dragged. I was there for it.
Pacing was fine. It did zip on by. And I'm fine with them kind of like using the weak structure. Like as in not strong structure, but the structure of a week to tell a story here and to kind of work out some of the problems along the way. Like that's fine. Like that is a good thing for them to lean on. And it also means that we'll get to see fun and funny jokes along the way because they'll be working out sketches and any more of that kind of stuff will be great. I'm sure they'll walk away from it, but
yeah, my hunch is we're not going to get too much. because it would mean having to write like two shows each sure. week, right? He's got to write his episode of Studio 60 and the Sunset Strip, the TV show, and the TV show. You know what I mean? And it's it is a brilliant cheat, and I think a fair one to be like, hey, we're only going to see little bits of these sketches. So we don't know, how do you sustain that game show for 5 minutes? Or how do we mm-hmm. do this Nick Cage thing for a 7 minute sketch, whatever? Like, we get to see the funniest 45 seconds. That's freaking yeah. great. What a cool move. I like this one. I certainly want to keep watching. How's that? Mm-hmm.
I think we should keep watching, Lex. I think
yeah. The clock?
I know Matt is, because he's got one in his office, which apparently right. is battery powered, because it was still on when the power went out. Did you notice that?
I did. And it has a funny thing where sometimes, I think I read on like one of the IMDb goofs pages that in various episodes, the clock does not go in order, which
okay.
Doesn't surprise me. That'd be hard to keep track of. But I noticed in a couple shots, having read that, it was in my mind, I guess, Matt was perfectly positioned with the camera so that you could not see hours and minutes. You could see the second sticking by, but you couldn't yep. see the other numbers. Like, yeah, that's the right way to do it, or yeah. not have that giant clock there. Mm-hmm. Like, smash that clock and know that you can just tell time. yeah. I don't know. I like this one. Yep. And if you were thinking about this podcast, dear listener, I like this one. Well, Brian's going to tell you what you should do about it.
I think you should sit down and watch The West Coast Delay sometime between now and a week from now, because that's the one we're going to be covering next week. But in the meantime, because, you know, that's only going to take 40 minutes and you got plenty of other things you can do this week, you should go to theincomparable.com and sign up for a membership. And there you can choose the shows that you would like to dedicate some of your membership dollars towards. And we'd certainly appreciate it here. But there's also plenty of other good shows on The Incomparable. So go check some of them out. Lex, tell me what one of those are.
Oh, well, some of my favorites are Not Playing with Lex and Dan. And Friendly Competition.
That's enough. That's plenty. Friendly Competition is a fun one, too. Yeah, but go listen to both of those and then decide if you want to add some of your dollars towards those. We'd love if you could rate and review the podcast in, I guess, Apple Podcasts, but some of the other ones are fine, yeah. too.
We keep hearing from listeners, so thank you for those of you who reached out, sorkin@lexfriedman.com. We can't respond to all of you, but we do appreciate hearing from you, and thanks for telling us all the things you have to say.
Yeah, y'all are great. Thanks a bunch. And there's probably one more thing people can do. Any thoughts there, Lex?
In my opinion, and listen, life is about making choices. People are going to do what they have to do, but I strongly encourage you, if you are at all capable of doing so, keep Sorkin in it.
Great plan. Let's do it.